Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Taylor, and in studio this week, as usual, we've got Daryl.
Hello.
Albert.
How's it going?
And Josh.
Hey again, everyone.
The big story lately has been John Terry. He was the captain of the English national team, and he allegedly had an affair with the ex-girlfriend of fellow national team player Wayne Bridge, with whom Bridge has a child. So obviously this didn't go over too well, especially with manager Fabio Capello, who subsequently stripped Terry of his captaincy. So my big question is, why is this such big news, and why does a seemingly private issue matter to so many people? Daryl, you want to take this one?
I think the reason it matters in England is because being the England captain is sort of like being the president or something, you know what I mean? It's just a huge, you become part of public life in England almost, mm-hmm. if you're the captain of England. Mm-hmm. Because the football team, the national team is so important. So many people pay attention to it and want it to do well. Mm-hmm. And also because you're sort of representing the country by being the captain. Mm-hmm. So to suddenly do something that, or allegedly do something that disgraces the national team. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the Tiger Woods thing. It's the reason the Tiger Woods thing was so big here.
Yeah. See, I agree with that, but I think it's also, it's different to me because it hasn't seemed, at least not here, you know, I'm sure probably the tabloids in England are enjoying themselves thoroughly,
sure.
But, you know, with the Tiger Woods, it was all like, you saw it on TMZ, you saw it on gossip sites, and it seems like a lot of the coverage has mostly been about the effect on the dressing room, the effect of, like, John Terry, the captain, doing something.
See, I would argue that the English tabloids, they use that as the reason to run the story, but they run the story because it's a juicy scandal. Mm-hmm. So it's like an excuse.
Okay. That makes sense. But I think one thing that people may be having a bit of a problem with, at least here in the United States, is kind of understanding why it's a big deal in terms of John Kerry being stripped of the captaincy. So I guess I'll ask you guys, Al, what would you say is the most important role of the captain, or what exactly does the captain do in football or soccer?
I mean, that's quite a large question to try and tackle, but
I would like you to answer succinctly and by yourself.
Five words or less.
Do it.
Okay, let's try. I think that, you know, having played the game myself at a decent level, obviously not anywhere near the England national team, the most important thing I think a captain can do is not necessarily on the field, or on the field that we see, not during game time, but it's, you know, the dressing room, and then when you're out with your teammates, and then especially in practice. Mm-hmm. And I think this is maybe why it's such a big deal in terms of the team and why he gets stripped of the captaincy, is that you see these people every day. If you're England, you're going to go to the World Cup, and you're going to train together for, you know, a month before the tournament, 3 weeks before the tournament, then you're in the tournament, hopefully for the English team, for another, you know, 3 weeks. So that's 6 weeks where you're seeing these people every day. Mm-hmm. And this person,
I'm hoping England are there for another month.
Okay.
You might be hoping for 3 weeks.
But, you know, and so, excuse me there, but you're hoping, you know, you're going to see these people every day for 6 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't a cohesive unit, then those are going to cause fractures that will then be able to be seen on the field.
Right.
Well, here's my big question with this is John Terry will still be in the England team.
Yes.
But for some people, him being stripped of the captaincy solves the problem. Well, I mean, whether you agree with that or not, but that sort of implies that the captaincy is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So I think what we want to try and get into is why. Why is the captaincy such an important thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think to start with that, you kind of got to look at, like, maybe you could say there are different types of captain, I guess, because as Albert pointed out, it's not something that you can really just say, like, you know, statistically, this is what's important to be a captain, or it's not something that you could just say, like, this is what makes a good captain. But I think you can break it down to kind of the different categories, almost, of different types of captain. So I think maybe, like, the most obvious example, at least for me, would be David Beckham in Los Angeles. He came in, you know, probably didn't know a whole lot about the team, a whole lot about the players, but he was automatically captain. And I'm wondering if that's a decent way to do things. What do you think, Josh?
I'd have to go with a big no on that one because you mentioned it actually in your little build-up. If you don't know the players, you don't know the team, then I don't know how you can be a good leader of the people. You've got to get to know how to motivate them, and you've got to earn their respect. Just because you're the best player doesn't mean they respect you the second you walk onto the field. You've got to put in the hours.
Yeah.
Having said that, however, it can work out to have your best player be the captain of your team. It just didn't work out in that circumstance.
I think the key there is that Beckham had no relationship with the Galaxy players.
I definitely agree.
And I mean, there are plenty of examples of the best player being a successful captain. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think Diego Maradona, Johan Cruyff, Franz Beckenbauer. Mm-hmm. But in all those situations, they'd sort of grown as a as a player mm-hmm. and sort of with that team. So they knew the players and the players respected them and understood this is the best player and this is how we work with them.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting thing off that point is you mentioned two attacking players, Johan Cruyff and Diego Maradona, and then you mentioned a defensive player
yeah.
and Franz Beckenbauer. And usually when people think of the best player on a team, and you feel free to disagree, you think of that attacking player, maybe not a goal scorer, but an attacking central midfielder.
Mm-hmm. And at least the most famous player, yeah.
Yeah, and oftentimes that player is not named captain. You know, it's kind of weird. You know, Didier Drogba, for instance, I mean, mm-hmm. not the best example if I'm trying to say, but he scores a ton of goals for Chelsea. I don't think he's ever going to be Chelsea captain.
No, I would absolutely agree with you yeah. on that one. I think maybe to a lesser extent, you could say like Wayne Rooney,
yeah.
Who maybe one day will be captain, but right now, you know, he's maybe filled in for Cristiano Ronaldo as being like the talismanic player. He's the one mm-hmm. the players look to, but he's not the captain. I mean, right now it's Gary Neville, and then Ryan Giggs fills in sometimes. So yeah, I think that definitely makes sense. I think the other thing with Beckham is that I feel like it was kind of sort of forced upon him by the people in the Galaxy organization and his own people, that maybe it wasn't him per se being like, I want it. But I do think maybe that there are times when there is sort of that drama when the best player does look at the captain and be like, well, I should be the captain. I'm the best player. And I think in that situation, maybe it helps to have a more rigid system. Like, for example, the Italians, another way that they appoint the captain is through just career appearances. Whoever has the most, they're the captain. You know, so they have, I think, Fabio Cannavaro. He's the all-time leading. He has the all-time record for career appearances. I guess that can be good, but I could also see some shortcomings in there. Daryl, what would you say about that one?
I suppose you could argue that just because you've made the most appearances doesn't make you the best leader. Mm. But then on the other hand, you could argue that you don't get to have that many appearances without doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think that off that, you've seen it be successful with the Italians. But we were talking before the show about in France with their national team, how Patrick Vieira is the captain yeah. of the French national team. And at least with Cannavaro, he's on the field when Italy plays. Mm-hmm. Patrick Vieira may very well not be in the starting 11 or the squad for France's national team. So it's kind of what we were talking about with Gary Neville
yeah.
previously, but that's a big deal. I think talking about captains, you want your captain to be on the field.
Yeah, and I think it's like Gary Neville, as you mentioned, doesn't get that much playing time. Ryan Giggs, who's the vice captain, he plays almost every single game. He's 36. He actually has the most career appearances of any Manchester United player ever. And I think that in that regard, Manchester United are very lucky to have a player that's that good that can still play at that level and, you know, is like a positive role model for most of the players around him. But I think that that's not probably not always the case. But obviously, I'm kind of gushing because, you know, I'm a Manchester United fan. So now I guess I'll give you two an opportunity to, because I guess the other type of captain that comes to mind would be just a player who leads by example. One there being probably Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, as a Liverpool fan, Steven Gerrard always comes to mind just as a great captain. And that's, once again, there's a lot of bias, I'm going to admit that, but it's because of the way he acts on the field, as far as I can see. Like, he will motivate a team, and you can see in some games when they're down or they're tied and they need that goal, where he just turns it on. And it's hard to describe without watching, which is, I think, we're having a little bit of difficulty with that right now. But yeah. It's that moment, that pass, that tackle, where everything just changes.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about Gerrard in terms of the captaincy is he seems like he's not that vocal on the field, generally speaking. You know, other captains, Roy Keane comes to mind, of people who are going to bark orders at mm-hmm. their fellow teammates. But he's a guy that, you know, the way the rest of the teammates on Liverpool draw inspiration from him is that they see it in him. They see him make that 6-yard run to win the ball, like Josh was saying. And that, you know, reminds them, hey, we're on a field. We need to play now.
You know. I think that's a really good point about Gerrard, is that you don't just being the best player doesn't mean being the most talented player, because you could argue that yeah. Fernando Torres is more talented than Steven Gerrard, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more about using that talent when the rest of the team needs it. Gerrard seems to have that in him, that he will, like you said, like the team needs lifting, he'll make a tackle, he'll make something happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another point that I think we've all kind of hit on, actually, is you look at Manchester United. Gary Neville and Ryan Giggs both came up.
Do we have to look at Manchester United?
We do. Every time we make an example, I would like to look at Manchester United. You know, they both came up through the youth system. Steven Gerrard, obviously, he's youth. You know, been with Liverpool his whole career. Same thing with John Terry. He came through that academy. And I think you look at other...
Chelsea.
Chelsea. Yeah, he came through the Chelsea academy. And I think it's not just in England, obviously. You know, you have, what, I guess, like... Who, like,
Francesco Totti at Roma.
Yeah, that's an obvious one. Yeah, it's a
crazy Raul at Real Madrid.
And then Puyo at Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, wow, you guys went 1-2-3. Good job. yeah, but I think maybe that's the key thing is, like, you can't have a guy just come in and not really understand the tradition, not understand the club as a whole, and expect to be successful. It's got to, you know, be there from a young age, and you can't have a guy who's, you know, a flight risk the whole time. Like, maybe that's saying it a bit harsh, but maybe like Cesc Fabregas is a guy who's constantly linked away from Arsenal.
And, I love the phrase flight risk. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, every time Arsenal leave, I feel like he's got a foot closer and closer to that door. So maybe not a flight risk, maybe just a run risk, a door risk. I'm gonna go door risk. But what about that idea? I feel like you all will agree because, you know, Steven Gerrard's not going anywhere.
I mean, I think it's an interesting aspect, and it kind of gets just null and void in international soccer, though, because you pretty much have to come up with your team if you ever get to be captain. So it's only a club-level discussion.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I think that, you know, the Gerrard discussion's interesting because, you know, now he's not going to go anywhere. There was a time when he was linked to Chelsea, and it came down to making sure Liverpool, as he said, you know, as long as Liverpool pay me a decent wage, I'm going to stay here for the rest of my life. And I think that type of stability means a lot, not only for the players in the team, but drawing players out, you know, transfers. I think that's a really big deal, is that you see some stability, probably not in the coaching ranks because very few teams are fortunate enough to have that. But, you know, the top player at the club, your captain, is going to be there for a long time. And I think that really helps everyone out in the team.
Yes, it's maybe not a thing where you have to come through the youth system. Maybe you just have to be committed long-term to the club. And maybe that doesn't even make you a better captain in terms of what you do on the field, but it gives the club a structure that everybody knows will be there.
And I would actually say that I think there is a limit to that almost, though, because like we've discussed Roy Keane. You know, Roy Keane was one of the most committed Manchester United players ever, to the point where it was almost like he was like more loyal to the club than anyone else around him. And you saw that, you know, with the way he left. And I think that...
He left by questioning the commitment of pretty much every player except himself, right?
Yeah. And by pretty much, I hope you mean live television. Yeah. So, I mean, in that regard, I'd say that, as well as I'm not sure you could even say that, like, I think clubs that have appointed, you know, like their captain to be their manager, I would almost say that's just an equally risky move because it's a guy who's, you know what it's like to lead on the field or to be that, you know, that key player on the field. Now all of a sudden he has to do it from the touchline. And I think that's a really difficult transition to make and not one that you can do easily.
I think that's an interesting point in general about managers, though, that rarely do you see great players become great managers. You know, like if you look at the best club managers of today, like Jose Mourinho didn't cut, you know, didn't make the grade at his club. Sir Alex, was he a great player?
He was decent, I think, but obviously he's a much better manager. Than
And you
especially
just...
now, he's a much better manager than his players.
I think it's important that we've now talked about like a lot of different types of captains and kind of like maybe unintentionally, but we still have kind of danced around the John Terry issue, which, as Daryl, I think, pointed out in the very beginning, is like, but John Terry is still on the team. And so I guess what I'm asking is, I guess, like, how does this change anything? Like, why does John Terry not being the captain change the way this England team is going to perform?
Well, honestly, I might be kind of a cynic on this one. I'm not sure it really will because it doesn't actually resolve anything except for in the media and in people's eyes. I don't think it resolves a single thing in the team's eyes. If he's the leader of your team, I think the players are still going to look to him. And if people have a problem with what he did, other players on the team are and I still have issues, so I don't think it changes anything.
I think that gets us into another really important thing about being captain is that it's about representing the team.
Yeah.
You go to the press conferences, you shake hands with the other captain and exchange pennants before the game. You're probably the guy who, when the sponsors are selling something, you're the guy who's got to go out and do it.
I just want to say real fast, and I think that like that may come off as kind of a trivial thing, like, oh, you exchange the banner before the game or whatever like that. But if you have, you know, a less than savory character exchanging with a player like Paolo Maldini, for example, who's retired. You know, if you have this incredibly venerable guy and then your captain is somebody who's maybe a little bit questionable morally or, you know, just as a player, like, I think right there that can kind of set the tone and that can be way more important than we really give it credit for.
Especially, I think, for a national team that draws on support from an entire nation, not to sound redundant, but, you know, that's a huge photo opportunity when the two captains meet, and you know, posters are made out of that. People are going to remember that moment for the rest of their lives. And exactly, I think you hit it on the head, Taylor.
Yeah. And I'm going to tread very carefully here, but it's almost like how a politician represents the country.
Mm-hmm.
You think, the reaction to the United States abroad with our former president
mm-hmm.
versus the reaction with our current president.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the sort of difference it makes. Maybe not on that same level, but you're still representing your nation in that way.
So you're comparing John Terry to Barack Obama directly?
No. The one before No.
Comparing another president to John Terry.
But I think, point blank, you want that picture opportunity. You want to sit there and tell your kid, hey, look at John Terry. He's the best we have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that doubt looking in their mind and be like, well, I don't really want my kid actually growing up like him.
I think another issue is that, obviously none of us have played professionally, or I don't think anyone has. Daryl, you were gone for a while, so like maybe you were on a trial or something like that. I don't really know. But the thing is, like, none of us really know what it takes to be, you know, a professional captain. But we know what it takes to be, I guess, a good teammate and a good captain here. And I think maybe that's what we can talk about, really, is like John Terry may not be the captain anymore, but he's still on that team, and he's still the guy who allegedly, you know, hooked up with his teammate's ex-girlfriend. Like, that's not something that would fly in everyday life, and so I don't think it's going to fly in, you know, professional football.
I really couldn't agree more with that idea, Taylor. You know, the highest level I played at was in college, and like I was trying to say before, the real issue with what happened wouldn't be our performance on game day. It would be in the locker room and going out and just hanging out as friends with people. Like, you're not going to be happy to see that person next to you mm-hmm. knowing that he allegedly slept with one of your other friend's girlfriends. I mean, it's that cut and dry, and then it's going to lead to poor performances on the field, I feel like. And it's just going to create a whole temperament around the team that is unsuccessful, and it takes your focus away from soccer mm-hmm. also. I think that can't be lost in all of this either, is that every player on the England team probably has had to answer a question or two about John Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to that point, when you start having these negative things happen to your locker room, there starts to be negative energy, which you can never downplay. And if you're sitting there in practice, everyone's trying as hard as they can, and there's just this one person that, say, half the team can't stand,
mm-hmm.
how's that going to display itself in practice? Are people going to go and chippy on him, or are mm-hmm. they not going to past him? Like, what's going to happen if you just don't respect this person?
Mm. I'd like to see Wayne Bridge try and go and chippy on John Terry. I don't think that would end very well for Wayne Bridge.
Yeah, Wayne Bridge, it is kind of an interesting point that, like, Albert, you said it jokingly earlier, but it is sort of a serious point. It's like, I mean, why not just drop Wayne Bridge from the English national team? I mean, I think undoubtedly John Terry is a better player than Wayne Bridge. So, you know?
Yeah, for those who don't know, Wayne Bridge is England's reserve left back
mm-hmm.
and he's even sort of struggling to maintain that spot at yeah. the moment, just mm-hmm. on form and talent
mm-hmm.
so yeah, that's an easy solution to this problem would have been mm-hmm. to drop Wayne Bridge, but
yeah,
that wouldn't have solved the problem with the tabloid newspapers.
Yeah, but then, you know, Ashley Cole never leaves his wife around John Terry ever again, and I think that's kind of what we're getting the point to is, like, that's kind of a situation where John Terry, he tried to, you know, block the media from reporting on it, and then he's kind of been, you know, mum about it. He hasn't come out and really dealt with it, and so it seems like it's still an issue where there's that, like, uneasiness around him, and so do you really want that guy to be the spokesman for your club when there's all this, you know, stuff hanging over him? Can he really focus on the World Cup when he's got every tabloid newspaper in England talking about him?
I think the other thing what we just talked about gets into is that we're trying to define what makes a good captain or what you need to do to be captain.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly we were talking about what you do on the field.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that we only see, say, 90 minutes on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more to being captain. There's, like, every day, like Albert talked about, every day.
There's 22 plus hours a day.
Yeah.
Other than that, yeah. You got to do it.
I think that off kind of what you're saying, Daryl, maybe this kind of gets you back to where you're trying to say, is that, like, our own experiences, like, we've all played men's league too. Like, there's little things that we all have to do that is just kind of silly, but it's still a responsibility of the captain.
You know? Yeah, I know. If someone came to watch us play soccer last season, say, mm-hmm. they'd have seen us, maybe seen one of us be captain of a team
mm-hmm.
and maybe try and judge us as a captain on that. What they haven't seen is that you've probably spent all week sending emails, mm-hmm. making sure people had transport to the game,
yeah.
making sure everybody's paid their league fees,
mm-hmm.
maybe sending emails to the league explaining why you haven't paid your league fees.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's so much happens off the field that you're responsible for.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, not saying that a captain of a national team is sending those emails or anything, but if we're sitting there doing that at a local 10-on-10 level, that's just kind of a kickball around stuff like that. It's not, I mean, we love it. It's not that serious though. What are all the things they're doing? Like their media responsibilities, their, it, being a captain has to encompass your life at a national level. So I think that's the problem.
See, I agree with that to some extent. I think that it can't really, you know, these guys are human. It's not going to encompass like every single minute. They're not going to be thinking about how can I make the team better? I'm the captain. I got to lead. But I think that it can definitely be like a guiding thing in your life where if you're contemplating sleeping with your teammate's ex-girlfriend, maybe you think, you know what, that might be a bad idea. That could be kind of bad for the national team. Maybe I shouldn't do it. And I think that John Terry didn't do that. And I think that there are athletes. Like if you look at Derek Jeter, for example, with the New York Yankees, name an actress he hasn't dated. That would take you much less time than the opposite. And yet he keeps all his endorsement deals, and he doesn't have this, you know, tabloid drama around him, at least not the negative tabloid drama. And I think it's because he's very aware that he is the face of the New York Yankees, who arguably are the biggest or one of the biggest sports franchises in America. And so he's not going to just screw it up for some, you know, stupid girl. He's going to really think about his actions. And I think maybe that's something that he would do that John Terry clearly didn't.
So is Derek Jeter the captain of the New York Yankees?
Yes, he's one of the four captains in baseball.
Yeah, he is a captain, but there is a very different sense of captain, in particularly in baseball.
Yeah. So this is kind of interesting to me. Like, is there an equivalent of the England captain in American life? Obviously, it's not the U.S. captain because the sport doesn't get as much media attention.
I would say no, to be honest, because we don't have a true national team that everyone gets behind and follows.
Yeah, I mean, I think the... Sorry, go ahead.
We have all these different local teams, so it's not... There's not.
But on those teams, in any of the major U.S. sports, is there a captain figure, usually like a Derek Jeter, on each team?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the NFL, they have their captains, and sometimes it's done differently than others, but I think kind of taking the conversation full circle, you have a lot of times on offense, the quarterback's the captain.
Automatically.
Almost. I think, Taylor, do you have those?
I think it's 24 of 32 teams have their quarterback as captain.
And I think it's like the ones that wouldn't surprise you. Like the Jets, they had a rookie quarterback, so they didn't have one. The San Francisco 49ers didn't really have a good quarterback, so he wasn't there. So it kind of depends. Yeah. But for the most part, yeah, it's going to be your quarterback. Even the Raiders, who were like one of the worst franchises ever with one of the worst quarterbacks ever, managed to have their quarterback as their captain.
All right. So what I'm interested in, because in a way it's hard to define what a soccer captain does.
Yeah.
So maybe by comparing it to captains in other American sports, we can sort of find some parallels that illuminate what a captain does.
Yeah, for me, I'd have to say it's one of the least covered sports, but I'd say the captain in the NHL in hockey is kind of a comparable role. You know, it's his job. He's the public figure. He does a lot of like the, you know, the ceremonies, the awards, that kind of stuff. He does a lot of the press conferences, but also he's the leader. He wears the visible, you know, the emblem. In soccer, you have the captain's armband. In hockey, you have the big C that goes on your jersey. And more than anything else, it's just he's going to be your leader. And it can be your best player. It can be your most venerable player. It can be your enforcer. It can really be anybody. It can just be the player that is, you know, most emblematic of your organization.
Say, and actually back to football, I think it's got a great comparison about the positional sense, because in soccer it generally does end up being a center midfielder or a defensive midfield or a center back, which it's the spine of your team. It's the people that can communicate the most easily with everyone else. In football, it's the quarterback, the middle linebacker, because they're sitting there in the middle. They can see everything and they can tell everyone everything.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting in where you're positioned on the field. Mm-hmm. I mean, how does everyone feel about, say, a goalkeeper being captain or a right winger being captain or a striker being captain?
I think it makes it so difficult for communication.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the goalkeeper is almost a captain of the defense by default. He's directing defenders all over the place. But once play moves out of the defensive third, it's extremely difficult for them to communicate. So
yeah, it's too far away for him.
Yeah, I mean, in simple terms, like, he's going to be shouting up and down the field, and it's going to be difficult.
It's not even that. I played goalie, and I could get away with saying whatever I wanted at the refs because they couldn't hear me in a big job. I'm not going to lie about that. And a big job of being captain is being able to communicate with the refs, being the person that's the go-between to tell your team, hey, we got to calm down right now.
I do think it's an interesting thing that, you know, we've talked about different sports, we've talked about different, you know, types of captains, and it's clear that it's not just something that you can say, like, this is the best captain. That having been said, that's what I'm going to ask you to do right now. because I do think it's interesting to see, you know, what we all value when it comes to leadership on the field and what we all kind of respect in the role of captain. So I'll go first. For me, I'm going with the player that I've seen in my lifetime, in person and, you know, on television. It's Francesco Totti of Roma and Italy. And it's basically just because he's a player that's been with that club, you know, for as long as I can remember. He's played with them day in and day out. And he really is. If you think Roma, you think Totti. It's not like that with a lot of the clubs, but it's like that with them. And I think that, you know, he's just an amazing captain, an amazing player. So for me, that's what it is to be a captain.
If we're talking about just things we value, then I'm going to pick one from history mm-hmm. that I actually just read about recently, but I was very impressed. Danny Blanchflower, who apparently was the Spurs and Northern Ireland captain. Mm-hmm. He captained Northern Ireland when they played Italy in Belfast, I think in the 50s. And apparently the Italian players were sort of being a bit rough. And so there was a pitch invasion mm-hmm. from the Irish fans.
Yeah.
And so Danny Blanchflower assigned a Northern Irish player to sort of man mark and protect an Italian player each, like to get in front of them and mm-hmm. so prevent the fans from injuring the Italian players. And apparently everyone got away unhurt. So in terms of like taking responsibility and solving a situation, mm-hmm. to me that seems like the ultimate in captaincy.
Yeah.
That is a pretty amazing story.
Yeah.
It's not bad. I'm going to go with, again, someone that I've seen. And for me, the best captain that I've seen was Dunga for Brazil in 1994. Mm-hmm. He didn't start out the tournament as their captain. Actually, that was Rai. And Rai had such a poor run of form that after two games, he was dropped from the side completely. And Dunga filled in and led the team to a World Cup title. He made the third penalty kick in the shootout against Italy. And I think that any time you can step in and be looked to as a leader in the middle of a tournament and lead a team to a championship, that's a fantastic achievement.
Yeah, it's got to be tough to take over halfway through do it successfully.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, my favorite one ever is, we've already harped on enough, at Steven Gerrard. So I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine and say Jose Nassazzi.
Is that your second week in a row in the Wayback Machine?
Yes, it is. It's my favorite machine. But anyway, it was Jose Nassazzi. He's the Uruguayan captain that won the first World Cup ever in 1930. He also won the Olympic Games in 24 and 28 and four different Copa Americas. He never got a chance to defend his World Cup championship because mm-hmm. Uruguay refused to play in 34 and he retired in 37. So I would just say, with that run of titles and being the best player on the most dominant team of the era, it's pretty amazing.
Does that mean he pretty much won every tournament he entered with Uruguay?
Pretty much, yeah.
I don't give you that.
All right, I guess that's an important thing there. Yeah, so that, all right, so I guess that'll do it for the captain talk, and that'll also do it for this week's show. So say goodbye, Josh.
Have a good one, everyone.
Say goodbye, Albert.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Daryl.
Goodbye.
And please excuse the fact that Josh didn't say goodbye. And that's it for me. See y'all next week.